Reductionism. The belief that human behavior can be explained by breaking it down into smaller component parts. I had barely stepped foot over the threshold and I already felt claustrophobic. I wanted to turn back. People shuffled into the room in front of me, while somebody else stood directly behind me, a little too close. It felt hard to escape. I could see Nola lying in a bed to my right. She was about 10 years old, I guessed. This was her bedroom. I'd come knowing what to expect, but somehow I still wasn't prepared. 5 people and 1 dog had just walked into the room, but she didn't have so much as a flicker of acknowledgement for any of us. She just lay perfectly still, her eyes closed, apparently peaceful. "She's been like this for over 1.5 years, Dr. Olson said, as she bent to stroke Nola gently on the cheek. I was in Horndal, Sweden, a small municipality 100 miles north of Stockholm. Dr. Olson was my guide. She was a slim, deeply tanned woman in her 60s, with a distinctive triangular white patch in the fringe of her light brown hair. She had been caring for Nola since the child had first fallen ill, so she knew the family well. Dr. Olson's husband Sam and their dog had also come with us. All 3 were regular visitors to Nola's home and knew the way around it. From the front door, they had led me promptly and directly to Nola's room. It was almost too abrupt for me. One moment I was outside, in the midday sunshine, then suddenly I was in the twilight of a sleeping child's room. I had an impulse to open the curtains. Dr. Olson must have felt the same, because she walked to the window, drew the curtains aside, and let the light in. She turned to Nola's parents and said, "The girls have to know it's daytime. They need sun on their skin." "They know it's day," her mother answered defensively. "We sit them outside in the morning. They're in bed because you're visiting." This wasn't just Nola's room. Her sister Helene, who was roughly 1 year older, lay quietly on the bottom of a set of bunk beds to my left. From where I stood, I could only see the soles of her feet. The upper bunk, their brother's bed, was empty. He was healthy. I had seen him peeping out from around a corner as I walked to the girl's room. Dr. Olson turned and called to me. "Suzanne, where are you? Aren't you coming to say hello? Isn't that why you're here?" She was hunkered down by Nola's bed, brushing the child's black hair to one side with her fingers. I stood wavering near the threshold, struggling to take the final few steps of a long journey. I was pretty sure I was going to cry and I didn't want the others to see. I wasn't ashamed. I'm human and upsetting things upset me. Sick children in particular upset me. But this family had been through so much and I didn't want to put them in the position of having to comfort me. I fixed a smile on my face and approached Nola's bed. As I did, I glanced over my shoulder at Helene and was surprised to see her eyes open for a second to look at me and then close again. "She's awake," I said to Dr. Olson. "Yes, Helene's only in the early stages." Nola showed no signs of being awake, lying on top of her bed covers laid out in preparation for me. She was wearing a pink dress and black and white harlequin tights. Her hair was thick and glossy, but her skin was pale. Her lips were an insipid pink, almost colourless. Her hands were folded across her stomach. She looked serene, like the princess who had eaten the poisoned apple. The only certain sign of illness was a nasogastric feeding tube threaded through her nose, secured to her cheek with tape. The only sign of life, the gentle up and down of her chest. I crouched beside her bed and introduced myself. I knew that, even if she could hear me, she probably couldn't understand. She knew very little English, and I didn't speak Swedish or her native language, Kurdish, but I hoped the tone of my voice would reassure her. As I spoke, I looked back at Helene again. Her eyes were fully open, and she met my gaze, allowing me to see that she was watching me. I smiled at her, but her expression didn't change. The girl's mother stood at the end of Nola's bed, leaning a shoulder against the wall. She was a striking woman with high cheekbones and a prominent café au lait birthmark on her forehead. She had relinquished control to Dr. Olson and was watching me closely. She seemed calm and dignified. Her husband, the children's father, stood at the doorway, shuffling in and out of the room. Like Sophie, whose story I had read in that newspaper article, Nola and Helene are 2 of the hundreds of sleeping children who have appeared sporadically in Sweden over a span of 20 years. The first official medical reports of the epidemic appeared in the early 2000s. Typically, the sleeping sickness had an insidious onset. Children initially became anxious and depressed. Their behaviour changed. They stopped playing with other children and, over time, stopped playing altogether. They slowly withdrew into themselves, and soon they couldn't go to school. They spoke less and less until they didn't speak at all. Eventually, they took to bed. If they entered the deepest stage, they could no longer eat or open their eyes. They became completely immobile, showing no response to encouragement from family or friends, and no longer acknowledging pain or hunger or discomfort. They ceased having any active participation in the world.